welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. Well, before we get started on today's podcast, I just want to extend a very Merry Christmas to all of my listeners. For those of you who don't celebrate Christmas, my most sincere best wishes on a great holiday season to you and your family. It's been a great 2008 for me, starting the website and the podcast, and I really look forward to another successful year next year for all of us, trying to improve ourselves and our tennis together. You may have noticed that, again, I released this podcast a couple of days early on Friday, the 19th of December. That's because I'm going home, my wife and I, to Wisconsin, where both of us are from, and we'll be there for about a week during Christmas. I'll be back on the 29th to release podcast number 46 on my regular day, which is Monday. So I'll see you guys back on the 29th. After Christmas. That's the Monday after Christmas. And speaking of which, if any of you are in Milwaukee, in the Milwaukee area, send me an email at ian@essentialtennis.com and we'll get together and chat for a little bit. I'm not sure if I have any listeners there or not, but that's where I grew up, and so I'll be there all next week. Now, on to today's show. We have three topics here that were brought to us by listeners. One has to do with technique and how to hit a ball back when you're in a defensive position. We're also going to discuss coming back after a long break from tennis. And how do you most successfully get back into your tennis game after you've taken a break? And lastly, we're going to talk about two follow-up questions about the podcast on grips, and what grip to use etc. That came to us from Howard, and he has a couple of follow-up questions. I think that was podcast number 41. So sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction.
And now it's time for Essential Tennis Q&A.
Okay, our first question today comes from Dolores in Texas. She's a 3.5 level player and said, "Can you please tell me from playing experience, what is the best way to return a shot hit to the corner with me standing near the middle of the baseline? Do I turn my body, run to meet the ball, and then use a forehand chop or cut or block, or do I use a normal drive with my right arm ending up in the air like I see many pros do on the court? Which is a safer shot and which is a more effective shot? Another thing, do I return the shot cross-court or down the line? Thanks for your advice." Sure, Dolores, good question. And that opens up really a lot of different issues and topics having to do with technique and with your strategy as well. I'm assuming that by how you phrase this question, you're probably a singles player and you're talking about a shot that is well hit by your opponent and you're being pressured, you're being pushed off the court to try to return a difficult shot, and you're starting from the middle of the baseline and trying to return a forehand where you're really being put in a tough spot by your opponent. They've hit a great shot. Let's talk about this. Technique issues when you're in a defensive position. When you're in trouble and on the run, there's several different options at your disposal. We're going to talk about three of them, three different strokes that you could try to use, and you actually... you mentioned each of these three. We're going to talk about when they're good to use, when they're not good to use. We're also going to talk about hitting cross-court or down the line. Let's start off, and we're going to talk about, again, three different strokes you could use, and we're going to go from the most defensive on through the most aggressive, relatively speaking. We're going to talk about the lob first. This is one option that you have when you are in a defensive position. And basically, Dolores, you're going to find here as I talk about this, that there's no, as with a lot of questions that I answer here on the podcast, there's never one answer. There's not ever a silver bullet, so to speak. where you use this shot or you use this strategy, and it's just always the best way. It's always going to be dependent on exactly what kind of position you're in, exactly how tough of a shot you're getting, what your strengths and weaknesses are, what level player you are. And it's going to be dependent on what your opponent is doing as well, if they're staying back and watching you run or if they're coming to the net. Let's talk about the lob first. And to hit this shot effectively when you're on the run, off to your right-hand side. And by the way, for all of these, you asked if you should be turning to the side. Yes, you should. For all of these, that's common. For all of these, you need to be turning your core to the side. Just about any shot you hit in tennis, you need to have good core rotation. And so you should be turning 90 degrees to the baseline with your upper body as you move out towards this shot. It's going to be the fastest way to get you there, and it's going to prepare your body to hit your shot once you get there as well. Now, to hit the lob, you want your racket face to be open at least 45 degrees or so, give or take. It depends on exactly how much loft you want, how much height you want, but at least 45 degrees is going to be needed to really get the ball into the air. And then you want to smoothly guide the ball up, again, around 45 degrees in terms of the actual direction your racket is moving. The racket path should be moving upwards with an open face to lift the ball and guide it up into the air. When you use this, you're trying to buy yourself time to get back into position and continue the point. This is the most defensive option that you have, is the lob. Open your face, lift it up, get yourself time as the ball is being lofted up into the air, and get back to a ready position in the middle of the court, hopefully, so that you have time to play the point and try to win it from there. This works great if you know your opponent is not coming to the net. If they don't like the net, or if they're not smart enough to move forwards when they see that you're in trouble, aiming high and deep and hitting a lob and recovering quickly is really a great play. And even at my level, which is 5.0, I will use this as well. When I'm really in a lot of trouble and I'm really getting hit off the courts, I'll often just put a sky lob up, and you'll see the pros do this as well when they're in a ton of trouble. Just put the ball way up in the air and get back into the court and get ready. If you're a beginner on up through a 3.0 player, this is definitely a smart play. It buys you the most amount of time, and relatively speaking, it's the easiest to hit as well. You're not trying to hit a fancy shot by any means. You're just trying to get it up into the air and hopefully pass the service line. Dolores, you said you're a 3.5 player, so this would definitely be a good play for you to use a lot of the time, depending on exactly how bad of a position you're in. Next up, let's talk about the slice ground stroke. To hit a slice, you want to have a slightly open face, not as much as with a lob, but it still should be open at contact. When I watch slow motion video of players hitting a slice, it's actually a lot less than most people think. Your racket's not going to be facing straight up towards the sky. It's really only probably 5 or 10 degrees open facing upwards, as opposed to perpendicular, which is 90 degrees to the courts. You're only going to want to be about 10 degrees more open than that at the most. Your racket path is predominantly moving forwards, but it will move downwards through the point of contact as well to create backspin. That's what slice is backspin. Slice, just like the lob, is a slower paced shot, and it's going to float through the air as opposed to a drive or a topspin shot, which you're hitting stronger and hitting through. That's going to give you less time because the ball is going to get to your opponent faster. A slice is going to buy you time to get back into the court. And again, you see the pros use this a lot as well when they're really stretched out wide. And so it buys you time. It's not as defensive as the lob because you're not putting it way up into the air where your opponent can really position themselves wherever they want in relation to the ball. It doesn't go up as high. However, it still floats more than a drive or a topspin shot. It's definitely a slice is definitely worth starting to develop if you're a 3.5 player or above, and it's a very useful shot in general to have, not only for when you're in a defensive position, but it opens up the door to other shots as well, like the drop shot or again the lob. These are the drop shot and the lob are both kind of a slice by nature because you're coming underneath the ball with an open face. And you're hitting backspin typically in both of those as well. So it's good to start getting a feel for that type of shot. It's very useful to be able to hit on your forehand or your backhand side. Typically, you're not going to slice as much on your forehand side, but if you want to be able to hit an effective drop shot or lob, it's important to get a good feel for coming underneath the ball. If your opponent does come into the net behind their shot after they've pulled you way off the court and they see you're in trouble, if they do come in behind that, this can be more easily made into a difficult volley for them. It's easier to control this shot, to hit it low at their feet, or you can maybe angle it or hit it down the line close to either sideline so that they have to stretch out to the side. With a lob, obviously, the ball is in the air so long that your opponent has the chance to position themselves under it and attack. A slice is not an aggressive shot by nature. However, you can still hit a more challenging shot than with the lob, generally speaking. Yes, you can hit a lob right on the baseline and hit a challenging shot using a lob. However, it's going to be a lot easier to use a slice than a lob to challenge your opponent if they're smart enough to come in behind it and if their volleys are good enough to really finish the point if you don't do something relatively good. Now, our third shot is a topspin drive or some combination of those two forces, the drive hitting forwards and topspin swinging upwards and curving the ball. Whichever way you prefer to do it, that's our third choice, and this is the most aggressive by far compared to the slice and compared to the lob. This is by far the most difficult to hit when you're on the run, and yes, you do see pros. Again, we've talked about the pros doing all three of these. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. By far, this is the most difficult. You'll see them doing this as well, as being way out on the run and hitting almost, you know, a seemingly impossible shot, passing shot past their opponent on the run. It's probably one of the most exciting shots in tennis is when their opponent will come forwards to the net after they've hit a good shot and in a very defensive position have the defensive player come up with a big aggressive ground stroke to hit a passing shot. To do this, your racket face is going to be flat, and you'll notice technique-wise the racket face has been more and more closed as we've gone through these different options. To hit a topspin shot or a drive, you want your racket face to be perpendicular to the court as you make contact, and this time your racket path is moving upwards and forwards as well. Now, it's going to be necessary for you to have this shot if you want to play at a 4.5 or above level, hitting an aggressively hit ground stroke while on the run and in a defensive position. It's important to be able to do this because at that level, players will come in behind their good shots most of the time, and oftentimes you need to be able to attack even when you're in a defensive position, even though, yes, it is difficult, but if you want to be a high-level player, this is a shot you have to develop at some point. Two more quick things here. I mentioned a second ago that the higher the level, the better of a shot you need to be able to produce in order to be competitive at a higher level of play. 4.5 and above, you need to be able to drive the ball if it's necessary. That being said, I've mentioned that all three of those options the pros will use, and they will mix it up. It's very important that you're able to mix up all three options during point play so that you don't become predictable. And also, you need to be able to use all three of those options at some point in your tennis play in case your opponent has an obvious weakness that you can exploit. For example, if their overhead is just not very good, you know, they can put it in play, but they're not going to win many points off it, then the lob would all of a sudden become a great option when you're way off the court. Go ahead and lob all day if they're not able to put that away. If it turns out they have a great overhead, but their volleys are not good, or maybe their backhand or their forehand, one or the other, their volley is not very good, then obviously the lob would not be a great choice. But you can use a slice or maybe a slightly less aggressive drive and just get it to whichever volley or either volley if their volleys are weak. If they do come to the net, you can go ahead and give them a volley on purpose. You know, not an easy one, obviously. We're not trying to set them up. But you can play towards whichever is their weakness as they're coming forwards to the net. And you'll play different players that have different tendencies. They'll come to the net. They won't come to the net. Different strokes will be stronger than others. And so you need to have different options to be able to mix that up as you play. Lastly, we'll talk about cross court or down the line. And again, it's going to depend on the situation. Cross court in general is the percentage play because the net is higher. I'm sorry, the net is lower and the court is longer. So you have more room for error in general hitting cross court. If you can comfortably do it and your opponent is staying back, cross court is definitely the way to go because that's where the most amount of court is going to be. You're going to make your opponent move a little more by angling the ball instead of hitting it straight. There's a lot of different reasons, but cross court really is the best way to go if you can get to the ball with enough time to be able to do it. If you're really out of position, if you're really in a tough spot and barely reaching the ball, hitting cross court can become very, very difficult because you have to get your racket face to the outside. You have to get around to the outside part of the ball to be able to angle it back the opposite direction that you're running in. So if it's a really tough shot, hitting back to the middle of the court or down the line is a good idea if you just can't get your racket around the outside of the ball to hit cross court. So in general, cross court is higher percentage, but if you're really stretched out, you might not have any choice but to hit down the line or down the middle, depending on what your opponent is doing. If they're just standing back there at the baseline and watching you, and you're really in a tough spot, go ahead, open the face up, and just lob it right to the middle of the court and just kind of start the point over again. If you're playing a 4.0 level player, and they're smart enough to move in, you probably won't be able to get away with that. So it's going to be dependent on the point situation and the opponent that you're playing against. But I just wanted to give you your options there, the different types of shots you have available to you, and a couple different ideas as far as point situation goes. So Dolores, hopefully that answers your question. Send me an email and let you know what you think. So let me know what you think, and hopefully that's helpful to you.
The Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by
Bridgewater Medical Group is a multi-specialty medical group located in Bridgewater, New Jersey, and is your home for primary care, gastroenterology, sports medicine, and general internal medicine. They offer a broad array of on-site, state-of-the-art services to make your healthcare experience more pleasurable. Scheduled appointments are preferred, but physician assistants are available for walk-in care. For more information, call Bridgewater Medical Group at 908-722-0808.
For more information on sponsors of the Essential Tennis Podcast or to become a sponsor, visit www.essentialtennis.com.
Okay, two questions to go here. Our next one comes from Dean, and he wrote his question on the forums. He wrote and said, John reminded me of a question I meant to ask a few weeks ago. Ian, do you have any suggestions for how to quickly recover one's game after not playing for a few weeks or even months? After a hiatus, it can be frustrating to lose one's timing and miss shots one would typically make. I suspect there is no magic bullet here, but perhaps you have some specific recommendations on how we should practice after a long break from tennis. Thanks. Well, I agree with you on two different things here, Dean. First of all, yes, it is very frustrating, and trust me, I understand. As being predominantly a teacher now and teaching tennis instead of playing it, when I do go and try to play, I unfortunately have to remind myself that I don't play anymore, not very often anyway. And it can be very frustrating to not hit nearly as well as you know you're capable of. So yes, I do understand it is very frustrating. And secondly, no, there is no magic bullets or you know drill to do where it's going to make you automatically be back to where you were. It's just one of those things that's tough. Dean had several good responses in the forums having to do with this, and I'm going to repeat a lot of what was written there. There were some great suggestions, lots of stuff that I agree with. And basically, Dean, slow and steady is the way to go. When you come back from a long break, like what you're talking about, make sure to take your time and get back into things at a slow pace. This means both overall intensity during your hitting, meaning when you go out and take and do your first practice, don't go out full speed right away and just run around all crazy and go for every possible shot and get yourself all worn out immediately. That's going to make it a lot tougher for you to hit because, like you said, your timing's not where it usually is. Your conditioning's probably not where it usually was. And so just take your time and just relax and start off slowly, both in overall intensity and also your individual strokes as well. Yes, continue to make full, long swings, but only at about 50 to 75% capacity as far as accelerating and how fast you're swinging at the ball. This helps you regain your timing and your muscle memory as well. And it helps you prevent injury also. If you haven't played for quite a while, and like I mentioned a second ago, you're not in the condition you're normally in, your body's just kind of gotten out of habit of being worked out. You don't want to go out at full speed right away, probably not at all during your first time back, because you have to get back into the swing of things, so to speak, and get your body used to playing again, both in terms of timing and your actual strokes and your actual skills, your technique of your game, but also as far as your conditioning as well. And just expect it to take several sessions before you're physically up to where you left off, both as far as the timing and the conditioning things go. And that really brings me to my main point here. Most of what I've said already was posted in the forums, but my main thing that I would like to get across to you is just be realistic. When you go back to the court, have realistic expectations for yourself. The vast majority of us don't have tons of natural talent where we can take a long break and come back out and just be 100% right away after 3 or 4 weeks and play at the same level that we did when we stepped off the court last time. It's very, very uncommon. And so expect that you won't be as good as the last time you walked off the court after taking several weeks off. I personally have only really played with one or maybe two people in my competitive career where they just were skilled enough, they had enough natural talent that they could go take a long break and come back and just still hit incredible. One particularly one person in college, just ridiculous natural talent, and he could come back after like a Christmas break, 3 or 4 weeks after doing nothing, not working out or lifting or hitting, as most of us typically would, and come back and he would almost play better after a rest, without playing at all. Very, very few people are able to do that. For the rest of us, expect it to take time to feel comfortable again. How much time is going to depend on the person and how much time was taken off, how much of a break you had. It could be hours, could be days, it could be weeks. It depends on the circumstances. If you're not gifted with a ton of talent like the person I was talking about, and everybody has different degrees of natural skill, depending on how much you have, it may take you a little bit longer than other people. Or it could only be an hour or 2 hours, and you pretty much feel back to normal. It's going to depend on the person. But my main thing to get across to you, Dean, is don't get frustrated. Tennis is a complicated group of muscle memories, all your different strokes. And it also takes a good amount of conditioning to be good at as well. Except that taking time off is going to result in some less than average play when you return. And so the main thing, in my opinion, is just the attitude. Just have realistic expectations. Don't get too frustrated. Remember that you do it for the enjoyment of trying to get better. And that really is why it's frustrating when you go back and, you know, you're playing tennis because you want to be good at it. And to go out and not play to what you feel where you should be performing, yes, that's frustrating. But cut yourself some slack, give yourself a break, because you took some time off. Okay, last question for today. This is a follow-up question from Howard in Edmonton, Canada, who's a 3.0 player. He wrote me a couple weeks ago, and I answered some questions for him having to do with his grip. He says in this email, thank you very much for the great advice on which grip to use when waiting for a shot in podcast number 41. I decided to wait with my backhand grip, Extreme Eastern, as it is my stronger side, and this has made a lot of difference as I don't get caught on that side anymore. To the point where my opponents last week preferred to hit to my forehand side instead, to stay away from my backhand. That's great, Howard. That was exactly the point, was to kind of favor the side that you like anyway, as far as your grip is concerned. Wait with that grip, and then you can use that side, in this case your backhand side, more often, and be prepared for it so that you can use that shot more effectively. It's great that that's already paying off for you. Now, the second part, he's got two quick questions here, two follow-up questions after that grip podcast. He says, secondly here, which brings me to a dumb question as a follow-up. In switching grips, what is the proper sequence for when it should happen when preparing for a shot? In other words, at what part of the stroke do you execute the grip change? Do you do it while the racket is in front of you, beside you, behind you, etc.? That's his first question. Well, when do you switch your grip? Howard, immediately after identifying what type of shot you'll have to be executing next. Your ready position at the baseline should be with whichever grip is most comfortable to you, whichever side your comfortable side is for you. It's your backhand. That's where your grip should be in your ready position on the baseline. So it's your backhand. So you're waiting in a backhand grip on the baseline. When you're at the net, your ready position should be in a continental grip, which should be used for your volleys, your half volleys, and your overheads. That's the case for 99% of high-level players. There's a couple of exceptions here and there, but vast majority of upper-level players use a continental grip for everything at the net. So when you're in a ready position at the net, you should have your continental grip. Now, from either of those two ready positions, you've got your baseline ready position with a ground stroke grip that you're waiting in, and a net ready position where you're waiting with a continental grip, you have to practice switching to other grips if it is needed. Obviously, that's going to happen a lot more at the baseline as you go from forehand to backhand. At the net, it doesn't happen much. If you get lobbed and you have to run back to retrieve it, sometimes you're going to switch to a ground stroke grip, either your forehand or your backhand, so that you can make a good swing at it and hit it back. But typically, you're just going to stay in that continental grip when you're at the net. Now, when you do have to switch, your non-dominant hand should aid in switching your grip. Whether you have a one- or two-handed backhand, your non-dominant hand plays a big role in actually turning the racket in your hand and repositioning it to a different grip to hit a different type of shot. Your dominant hand should stay nice and relaxed, and your opposite hand can then rotate the racket either way, whichever side it needs to go, depending on what type of shot you're going to be hitting next. Your dominant hand can rotate as well. In either case, it needs to stay relaxed, nice and loose, so that you can freely turn it back and forth quickly. You can use a combination of right and left hand to turn the racket, or just to turn your hand around the grip. You can do either one or a combination of both, whichever is faster and easier for you. I know that I kind of use a combination of both when I switch from forehand to backhand. I use my non-dominant hand up on the throat of the racket. Since I have a one-handed backhand, I keep it up there on the throat. And when I have to switch it from forehand to backhand, I turn my palm of my opposite hand to rotate the racket in my dominant hand so that I can turn from one grip to another. So that's my answer to that question, Howard. You need to use both hands to help you rotate the grip. That's going to be the most efficient way to do it. Find out which hand, you can use one or the other. Find out which way is easiest for you, either using your dominant hand and hold the racket still with your non-dominant hand, or you can turn the racket with your non-dominant hand and basically keep your dominant hand the same and just switch the racket, turn the racket with your opposite hand, or you can do a combination of both. It's up to you. Find out which one is easiest for you. Now, his second question, follow-up question number two is there such a thing as too many grips? I mentioned that I use an Extreme Eastern backhand as a hybrid backhand grip. He says it's between an Eastern and semi-Western. When I get caught not being able to switch fast enough, I wind up with a continental backhand and a mild Eastern forehand between continental and Eastern on his forehand side. So he's basically saying he doesn't quite turn it far enough, as far as he normally would when he gets caught off guard. I'm not doing this intentionally. My partners have observed me hitting that way when I get stuck. I have other questions about my transition game, but I'll save that for further podcasts. Thank you, Howard. Well, Howard, too many grips? No, it sounds like what you're doing is good. All high-level players use at least three grips, one for a forehand ground stroke, one for a backhand ground stroke, and then a serve, volley, and overhead grip as well. If you're having a hard time switching between those strokes, keep practicing. Identify what type of shot you'll have to hit next earlier. Work on your identification of kind of reading what type of shot you're going to have to hit next a little bit sooner, and find out what combination of using your hands together is most natural for you to physically switch your grip most effectively. Really, the only other way around this would be to try to use the same grip for everything. And while that is possible, it would definitely limit your potential as a player down the road. You're going to want to continue switching your grips from each of those different strokes that I mentioned a second ago. So that's my answer, Howard. Hopefully that answers your question. And I look forward to getting your other questions as well. And I'd be happy to continue helping you out. Thanks very much. Okay, that brings the Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 45, to a close. Thank you so much for joining me today. Again, very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everybody. Thank you so much for taking the time to download the file, and all of you who have taken the time to answer questions, and you're taking the initiative to improve your game. That always excites me. Thank you very much for taking the time to ask your questions as well. And I look forward to continuing to help everybody listening to improve their game. All right, well, have a great weekend, and I will talk to you guys, well, actually 2 weekends from now. Have a great 2 weekends, and I'll talk to you guys on the 29th as I'm back for episode number 46. All right, take care, everybody, and good luck with your tennis.